I am thankful for the theme of this lectureship, God's Design for the Home. It's a very needed study, and it is something that all of us as preachers, as parents, as concerned people for our young people, we need to verse ourselves well in how to help, how to counsel, how to encourage young people to make the right decisions. Man did not design the marriage relationship. He did not originate it. God did it. And I think sometimes we forget that. Man has changed, however, God's blueprint for the home. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32, "It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife and shall marry, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery." And then a very similar passage in Matthew chapter 19, we see that the Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" And he answered and said unto them, "Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder." They say unto him, "Why did Moses then command to give her a writing of divorcement and to put her away?" He saith unto them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." One thing that man has changed about the marriage relationship is its permanency. God did not intend for man to marry and then divorce and marry and divorce and the cycle continue. And in our society, here in the United States, especially noticeable for those of us, or those who work in school systems, it's noticeable that how few children these days come from homes where both the mommy and the daddy are present. A lot of this has changed over the years in just a very short time, it seems. The shame and the stigma of divorce has been taken away from our society, and it has become the norm rather than the exception for married couples to break up. Why? And what can be done to stop the breakup of our homes and to cause people to prepare themselves before they enter into such a relationship so that their marriage will not end in divorce? There's only one thing that will do this. There's only one thing that will restore strength to our homes and permanency to our husband and wife relationships. And that, of course, is a return to God and His divine blueprint for the home. What was God's purpose for marriage? Well, God intended the marriage to fulfill three purposes. That relationship was, first of all, meant to give man and woman companionship. And after God created man, he said, "It is not good that man should be alone." And so companionship was needed. Solomon said, "Whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing." Proverbs chapter 18, verse 22. "And two are better than one." Ecclesiastes 4, verses 9 to 12. Secondly, in marriage, God intended for man to procreate. He said, "Be fruitful and multiply." And Genesis 1, verse 28. And you know, only in marriage is the sexual relationship considered to be honorable and undefiled before God. Hebrews 13, verse 4. Thirdly, God intended in marriage that the man, the male, and the female find complete fulfillment in each other. In marriage, two individuals avoid fornication, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2, and they become one flesh, Genesis 2, verse 24. We see in marriage a wonderful plan. It's a wonderful thing, and yet man has corrupted it. God formed man and woman, and he put them together in this union for a lifetime. And that's the way God intended for it to be. And yet, heavenly ordained unions are cheaply dissolved because of the sin and selfishness by one or both partners in the marriage relationship. The only cure for sin and its consequences is to submit to and obey, of course, the gospel of Christ. And we see so many divorces in our society. I don't even know what the statistics are today. I know that they're much greater than they used to be. But this increased number of divorces, even among members of the church, is just a reflection upon man's disrespect for God and his plan for us. There's an important question that needs to be answered by everyone. Will God bless my marriage? Will God bless the marriage to be contemplated? Now, I know that over the years I've had the privilege and the honor to be asked by couples to perform their marriage ceremony. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to, I've got the best seat in the house. You stand up here and you look right in their eyes while you're talking to them. But a lot goes on before the ceremony. It should go on before the ceremony. And you as preachers, a lot of you younger preachers need to really consider before you marry someone, your responsibility to that marriage. You have a responsibility that you need to fulfill, that you need to do before that couple gets married. Now there's a question I like to ask. I've asked every person, every couple that I've ever married. I ask them, do you want God's blessings on your marriage? And in all the years I've preached, I've never received a negative answer to that question. Never had someone say, well, no, we don't want God's blessings on our marriage. No, yes, we want God's blessings on our marriage. And yet, when I proceed to talk to them about what is required for God to approve of a union, then some couples find themselves that they are really not qualified to marry, and yet they want to go ahead with the ceremony anyway, even though it would violate God's law. There are such things as unscriptural marriages. There are some of our preachers in the Brotherhood today that deny that. Yet, there are unscriptural marriages, and sadly, there are many preachers that are willing to accommodate couples in getting married in an unscriptural marriage, and they fail to teach them the truth. Jesus stated it from the beginning. Have you not read that he which made them from the beginning made them male and female? That would rule out some of the types of marriages that are being talked about today, same-sex marriages. No such thing. God made them from the beginning and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and cleave to his wife. That's another problem in marriage. Husbands and wives don't leave mother and daddy, and their problem, they go back running back to mother and daddy whenever there's a problem that occurs. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. It is permanent. It is not to be thought of lightly. And so Jesus, in his teaching, condemns some kinds of marriages. He condemns polygamous. He condemns homosexual, if there is such a thing, relationships, adulterous relationships. He condemns those kinds of marriages. And yet there are people who reject the word of God, who simply do not care whether God will approve of their marriage. Certainly, there are those in our society who need to go back into their closet, the closet of shame. They need to stay there where they belong, because it is a shame to speak of the same-sex marriages where they go to the White House, to the capital of our nation, and clamor for rights to do that which is wrong. Polygamous marriages, where man is married to more than one woman, of course it's illegal in our country. Some still manage to do that. It's interesting that the Mormons do not advocate, do not encourage women to have more than one husband. It's always just the man that has more than one wife. Those things are condemned by God, by Christ. And adulterous marriages. You have to explain to people what you mean by an adulterous relationship, because they don't always get it. They don't always, they think, well, all sins are forgiven. All sins, God will forgive. And if I've made a mistake in the past, you know, in my marriage, this is my third marriage now, it's okay. God will forgive me. Need to instruct people in what the Bible teaches, where a person remarries after a divorce in which fornication is not the cause, that is adultery, and it cannot be. There is another consideration that a Christian should think about as to whether God will bless a marriage. And it is my sincere conviction, and I've heard it stated several times in the lectureship already, that a Christian should always marry another faithful Christian. Now, you have couples, young people coming to you, and sometimes one will be a Christian, and they've been dating someone who is not a member of the church, and they talk about how much they love this person. And it's true that there have been cases where a non-believer is converted after marriage, but it doesn't happen always. In fact, a great number of Christians do not convert their spouses. And in fact, many themselves, after marriage, because they marry a non-Christian, they themselves become unfaithful to the Lord. And those who do remain faithful, and their husbands or their wives never obey the gospel, they have to live, and they have to face conflicts in their life, in their married life. When children come along, where will the children, or if the children will attend services, will be an issue. What the children are allowed to do. And so we encourage, and I encourage always, Christians to marry other faithful Christians, even though one selecting a Christian doesn't guarantee a happy home, because not all Christians are what they ought to be. It is important that a Christian who seeks a lifelong companion look for someone who is spiritual, who is honest, who is responsible, and who is guided by biblical principles. Now, before one gets married, you have an opportunity. We as preachers, as parents, grandparents, we have an opportunity to help young people to make the right decision and to make their life happy. Can potential problems be identified before the vows are said? If you could know about a problem that was going to occur in your marriage, some couples would never get married knowing what was going to happen in the future. But we cannot look into the future in that way. Hindsight's 20/20. If only I'd known what type of person this person was, I'd never married him. You hear that in bitter breakups. But the truth is, when you examine the marriage difficulties that other people have had, and you see the warning signs that led up to those marriage difficulties, then you can know, you can look at your own situation and see the chances, how great the chances of the same thing happening in your own relationship are. The causes that are listed on most divorce papers are very vague and they are nondescriptive. Things like irreconcilable differences, incompatibility. What does that mean? Well, I know what it means because I know why people get divorced. I've counseled with people who are trying to save their marriage. And usually I'm counseling with just one because the other is not willing to receive counseling. The real reasons for most separations can be identified. And preachers, you need to help the young people that come to you. Make them understand, make them look at these possible problems, future problems in their marriages. Why is it that some marriages fail? Why is it that divorce happens? Well, first of all, selfishness causes divorce. And marriage is not an entirely unselfish thing. We enter into marriage because we have certain needs we want to be met. And yet, it is true that selfishness, the sin of selfishness, has destroyed many homes. The solution is Christ-like love, which puts the other above self. The Apostle Paul stated, "So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever hateth him his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church." Ephesians 5, 28 and 29. You've heard the advice, well, you've got to share in marriage 50-50. Not so. You have to give, both parties must give 100% in order for that marriage to be successful. And I tell young people a good way to determine whether the person you plan to marry is going to be truly thoughtful and unselfish towards you is to look at how they regard you right now while you're dating them. And if they do not treat you considerately and kindly now when they're trying to win your heart, it's not going to get any better. It's going to be worse after you get married. Now, it's on this point that it's good to point out to the young ladies that they need to consider whether or not the one they plan to marry is one to whom they can gladly submit themselves. In the Bible teaches that we are all to be in subjection to one another, James 4 and verse 7. And additionally, the woman is to submit herself to her own husband, Ephesians 5 and verse 22, and Colossians 3 and verse 18. Now, I know that this idea is opposed to the modern day women's lib movements, but actually the spirit of the women's lib movement is contrary and opposed to the God-given order because God's will came first. And we must teach that. Both businesses and governments and other things like that, we know that there has to be a single head. And imagine the confusion, the turmoil in our physical bodies if our bodies had two heads. But God knew that even in the home, that the home needed a single head, and he assigned the authority and the responsibility of being that head to the man. He is the head of the home. The woman who pleases God is the woman who yields to and surrenders to her husband as the head of the home. Now, this is a voluntary thing. The marriage is a voluntary thing, that you enter into this relationship. And so in view of the fact that she voluntarily places herself under his authority and obeys him, she will surely want to take time to thoughtfully consider and evaluate the one that she intends to marry. She'll want to find someone who is kind and considerate and loving rather than someone that is presently showing signs of being harsh and selfish and mean-spirited. It won't change. A young man also needs to consider, a Christian young man who wants to lead his home, wants to love his wife and care for his home, but he also needs to understand and seek a wife that will allow him to assume his God-given authority in the home. Will she be respectful and supportive of his decisions? Even though you're going to make wrong decisions, it should not be that the woman will be contentious and selfish. Remember the wise man Solomon, the words that he wrote about those undesirable features in a woman. He said, it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Proverbs 21 verse 19. A continual dropping on a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Proverbs 27 verse 15. It's not hard when the man and the woman in marriage pursue the same goal of pleasing God and going to heaven. It's not difficult for each to assume their God-given responsibilities and roles in the marriage. There was a couple that had been married for over 50 years, and they had sort of a secret, I suppose. They revealed their mutual goals in life were, number one, to pay all debts. Number two, educate our children. Number three, see that our children obey the gospel and remain faithful. Number four, set the right example. And number five, be honest with our fellow man. And so their ambitions were not of a selfish nature, but rather they were in keeping with their devotion to God. It has been observed that marriage is a sacred triangle, a holy covenant between a man and a woman pledged before God. An unknown author has written the following poem entitled, Are There Three in Your Marriage? I once thought that marriage took just two to make a go, but now I'm convinced it takes the Lord also. And not one marriage fails where Christ is asked to enter as lovers come together with Jesus at the center. But marriage seldom thrives and homes are incomplete till He is welcome there to help avert defeat. In homes where God is first, it's obvious to see those unions really work, for marriage still takes three. There's another thing that causes divorce. It's money issues. Tensions rise, tempers flare when the finances of a family are not planned out, when they are not discussed before marriage. And so in order to prevent that, it's good for young couples to learn how to budget before they get married. Young people who cannot manage their money before they get married are not going to automatically, somehow, miraculously change after they get married. And so couples should discuss money matters with each other and agree upon how their money is going to be spent before they join their lives and their checkbooks together. It would be a strange thing indeed to walk up to a complete stranger and say, here, hold my checkbook or hold my wallet for me. When I need some money, I'll ask you for it. You wouldn't do that, but it's the very same thing that happens when you enter into marriage without first discussing spending rules and how that money is to be spent. Now, the love of money is the root of all evil, 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. And that is the cause of many serious difficulties in marriage. Probably one of the major causes, in fact. That's another reason why a Christian ought to marry a Christian, because Christians have a different viewpoint toward material things. There are some problems that all people have financially. Maybe they're caused from impulse buying or living beyond one's means. Credit cards are so easy to get and run up the balances on them for things that you, quote, need. But it's good, and it's something I encourage young people to do before they get married, to take a lesson from the Bible and some basic principles of finance. Number one, everything belongs to God. He gave us these things to use, and so we are only stewards of God's possessions. Luke chapter 12, verse 20. Stealing is wrong. Cheating on your taxes or borrowing from your employer, that's not going to help you financially. Coveting is wrong. We need to be content with the things that we have, Paul said, Philippians 4, verse 11. Giving is right. And God expects us to give. Young people need to plan to give back to the Lord on the first day of the week. And that even when what we own is very meager, have very little amounts to spare, God expects us to give. Money management is right. Jesus taught in the parable of the talents that God expects man to use good judgment in taking care of what God has given to him. Now, it's good to sit down before you get married, before couples get married. We as preachers, older people, need to encourage young people to sit down with their future spouse, and if necessary, a competent financial planner, help develop a reasonable budget or spending plan. You'd be surprised. Some of the young people don't have a clue as to what it's going to cost to maintain their home. They need to look at those things before they get married. And if not, if they do not think about these things before they get married, it may cause serious and escalating arguments in time to come. Basic questions need to be answered, such as how will the family income be earned? Who controls the money? How will it be spent? What happens if there's a shortage? How should credit cards be used? And is gambling ever an alternative for work to get money? And some people get in trouble that way. Again, there should be an agreement before marriage. If the wife plans to work, then what will be the effect of children coming into the home, and how these matters need to be resolved before one gets married, so that there won't be a conflict later on. Irresponsible behavior causes divorce. When one person in a marriage is immature and lazy and is willing to let the other person do all the work, then there's going to be trouble in that marriage. It may be that a young lady in love with her Prince Charming, she doesn't mind at all doing everything for him, but later on, she starts to resent the fact that he's lazy and doesn't do anything. And the young man who thinks his bride-to-be is cute because she can't balance a checkbook and she's always bouncing checks here and there, he realizes later that that careless attitude is seen in her sloppy housekeeping and in her senseless spending habits. Before you marry that person, look deeply into their character and be sure that they are not self-centered, immature type of person. There is a tendency when dating to overlook the problems, the differences. You get excited. Young people get excited as they think about their upcoming marriage. They don't want to do anything or say anything to cause a problem in their relationship, to spoil their relationship. And then after they're married, they realize that the person that they've married is not who they should have married at all. They settle into their daily routines, and they get fed up and they get frustrated with the mannerisms and characteristics that the other one possesses. All these things could have been talked about, and how much better it would have been for them to have been addressed and resolved before the ceremony takes place. A good indicator of whether or not a person has a good character is whether or not they can hold a job, whether or not they can get along with other people. A dependable work record and having a good relationship with others is usually a sign of honorable integrity, but one who produces more excuses than work may be demonstrating something else about his character. Proverbs 18, verse 9, "He that is slothful in his work is a brother to him that is a great waster." Proverbs 21, verse 25, "The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hand refuseth to labor." Paul said in 2 Thessalonians 3, verses 11 and 12, if a man will not work, neither shall he eat, and neither shall you marry him either. Doesn't say that. I said that. Those individuals who seem to be irresponsible and immature before marriage tend to be such after the wedding. Opposite interests can lead to divorce. And you've heard the saying, opposites attract. That may be true with magnets, but I've never seen it in a marriage relationship be helpful. Common sense tells us that people need to share their interests, otherwise there are going to be problems in that marriage. The words incompatibility and irreconcilable differences are sometimes listed on marriage or divorce papers. Why? Well, because there's differences. And sometimes young ladies or young men may think it exciting to date someone who is really different from them and from their family. But beware. Paul said, "What fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness?" 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14. It's not very hard to predict what's going to happen if a married couple does not agree upon very many things. Infidelity is a major problem that causes divorce. Unfaithfulness to the marriage vows. Jesus stated that the only exception which would in God's eyes allow a person to put away his wife and marry another is fornication. The Greek word for fornication, porneia, is defined as illicit sexual intercourse. The word adultery, mokeia, denotes one who has unlawful intercourse with the spouse of another. God has promised to judge those who are covenant breakers. Romans 1:31. He will judge adulterers. Hebrews 13, verse 4. This is a sin that damages a marriage relationship in such a way that it is almost impossible to fully restore. And so the innocent party has the right to dissolve that union and marry again, but the suffering and the pain will never go away. It'll probably continue for a lifetime, even though that union has been dissolved. There is an innocent party. Some would deny that, but there is an innocent party, the one that does not commit fornication. Is there any way that we can predict whether a person we marry will one day be unfaithful? You'd think that if there was, you wouldn't marry that person, or you'd encourage the person not to get married. But there are warning signs, once again, that are often overlooked and ignored, thinking, well, it'll be different. They won't be as flirty after we get married. Yet marriage is based on trust, and you have to be able to depend on the other person doing what they say and being faithful. Otherwise, you're headed for discouragement and disappointment. Take time. Take time to give heed to who you're going to marry. There is a protection, I'd like to say, to keep one from ever having the problem of infidelity in your home. And every couple ought to be willing to agree to do this. You know, you promise to forsake all others, that's true. But in the future, when you get married, it should be a rule. It shouldn't be an optional thing. It should be a rule that it is never all right for either the man or the woman to have close friends and confidants that are members of the opposite sex. I have counseled couples, and I've seen so many broken homes that resulted from what began as a simple friendship. Oh, it's just a girlfriend, just a friend I work with. You know, in our society, it's not uncommon to see male and female coworkers or neighbors go to lunch together, do lunch, ride in cars together, share lengthy phone conversations. That shouldn't be. It ought not be. And it ought to be a rule in every home that that will not take place. Why risk the happiness of your home by not agreeing with such a rule? Differences in or lack of religious conviction can lead to divorce. We've mentioned this, and it's sad. Parents have been heartbroken when their children have grown up, obeyed the gospel, but later married someone who is not a member of the church. And often, in spite of the parents' pleading, those children gradually follow their unbelieving mate into indifference, or maybe even into denominational error. What does the Bible say about choosing a marriage partner? Really, it doesn't say a lot. because the responsibility of choosing a mate was often assumed by the parents. And I agree with those that would say, you know, that'd be a good idea to choose the mates of our children. But there are examples of that in the Bible. It's not done that way today. And so we must give counsel to young people to stress the importance of making their selection not on physical, but on their inner attractiveness. Solomon said, favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but of woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. How can a preacher best help those who desire to marry? You have a responsibility, preachers. You must not fail in your work to help them establish a happy home. Some preachers say, well, I just marry them. I don't do anything else. Well, you ought to. And there are some things you need to do. And first of all, it's give sound biblical advice. You may be the only person that can convince the person who is about to enter into an unscriptural union not to do it. Some young men or young women who have never been married before, for some reason, choose to marry someone who has been put away, who has no right to remarry, and they ruin their lives in that way. The responsibility of the preacher is to clearly teach the truth and explain that the only acceptable reason that God has given for divorce is fornication. Do not let family or congregational pressure cause you to compromise the truth. Secondly, help them to address and resolve potential problems. You may be the only one that is able to stimulate their thinking about issues in marriage, and also decline to marry them unless you're satisfied with their choice. That may not be a popular thing to do, to say, well, no, I can't. I will not perform the ceremony. But it should be the right thing, and it is the right thing. You should not marry a person who has no right, because God would not be pleased. The medical profession emphasizes the importance of preventing disease and injury, and they say that you should prevent and maintain your health. Well, that's the same way with marriage. The health of a marriage can be improved with an emphasis on preventing problems before they occur. We learn about marriage long before the wedding ceremony. I'm appreciative to those who have influenced me. I'm appreciative to my parents, Bert and Mary Powell, for the good example they've given to me for marriage. I'm also very thankful to my wife, Sherry, for being such a good wife, a great mother to our four children. It's brought great happiness to my life. We need to aspire as preachers to teach those younger and to help them to enter into marriage prepared. The greatest knowledge that one can have before marriage is to know God and to know the person that you plan to marry. Thank you.